Moshe Rabbeinu is described as a panim el panim, you know, that does speak to us from panim el panim. So it's just very, very mystifying. Again, Shom Shum Paul Hirsch in his Perush says that, you know, just coming to translate, which is what he did, he wrote a translation and a Perush. So he said just the effort to translate these psukim should trigger a certain yira, pachad, and charada. After all, he says, these are the psukim in the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu really pushes to understand the essence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if we translate improperly or interpret improperly, so we might be, you know, violating the limits that were already imposed on Moshe Rabbeinu, Adon HaNeviim, Moshe Rabbeinu lo kam b'Yisrael kemoshe. So we have to be very careful in translation and interpretation. I think it's a very good point. The truth is, it's important to know the context, both forward and both backwards and forward. The real context, of course, is the Chetah Egel. In a sense, the iron, it's not ironic, it's really this direct correlation between one and the other, because Klal Yisrael essentially reaches new lows in the post Yetzias Mitzrayim experience with the Egel Hazak, and of course that's part of the challenge of understanding the Parsha, to figure out how they could have sunk so low so quickly. They sink to new lows, and at the same time, you know, in the aftermath of this whole Parsha, when Klal Yisrael's fate is in, you know, is being decided, and Moshe Rabbeinu has to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, Yud Gimel Midos, and so on. So, after Klal Yisrael has really demonstrated its unworthiness and so on, so Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Ribbono Shel Olam and he says, both on the basis of personal stature and my status as leader of Klal Yisrael, let me lefnai v'lefnim inside, you know, the most guarded secrets of all. It's a strange kind of juxtaposition. One would have thought that Klal Yisrael had just proved that they were not anywhere near ready for this kind of a thing. But in a way, the story of the Egel Azav is really a story of how do you relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam? How much physicality, how much spirituality, what is the significance of having concrete symbols, human leadership. The truth is that on another level, if you don't look at it in terms of, you know, how disappointing Klal Yisrael's behavior is, if you look back, in a way, Moshe Rabbeinu could be saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, listen, we just underwent this very difficult period. In part, we did because there's great confusion in terms of how to relate to Avodas Hashem. Is it physical? Is it spiritual? Does the physical become spiritual? Essentially, that was the problem. Ish Moshe, that's what they said, basically. Moshe is too physical. Or we had a physical symbol and we need another one to replace it by, especially according to the view of the Ramban, and those in Farshim would say it wasn't really about Azara, it really was a question of tactics or strategy or nuances. Basically, they figured if Moshe Rabbeinu could be leadership for spiritual Klal Yisrael, to embody the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so other physical things could take its place as well. So in that context, notwithstanding the level of disappointment, so Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and he says, you know, we really need clarification and illumination when it comes to this issue of how we're supposed to relate to you. A, how we're supposed to relate to you, and B, what is your real essence? So what looks peculiar and ironic and paradoxical, in fact, I think it's very, very sensible. And in a sense, the tikkunim of the Egel, I think, reflect this question or the grappling with these issues as well. On the one hand, in terms of the classic views of Chazal, you have the story of the Paraduma, right? And especially in Rav Moshe Hadarshan, Rashi quotes in the beginning of Parshas Kukas, how, you know, the entire group of halachos, mystifying halachos of Paraduma, are really a tikkun of the Chetah Egel. Each point in its own way. Moshe Darshan, he does he does a good job. Moshe Darshan happened to go to town with this, but of course the roots of it are clearly in Medrash and Chazal and some of the Gemaras, so he goes even further with it, piece by piece, line by line, to establish this linkage. In a sense, part of the response is that the Paraduma is the classic Chok, right? Chok Chakakti Lacha, Ve'en Lacha Rishus Lahar Her Acharai. It's the ultimate in the Chukim. In one sense, the response to the Egel Azav is, at least accept the mysterious and the, that which is beyond logic. Whether it goes beyond that and says, don't ask questions, depends on how you understand the Gemara Yuma, when it says, whether in Rishus Lachar Harakarai means don't ask questions and don't even investigate. There are some things that you should just accept as is. Accept the mystery and embrace the mystery and don't go beyond it. Don't try to rationalize it. Perhaps Rabbi Yehuda Levi understood in this direction, at least. Rabbi Yehuda Levi seems to be very ambivalent about Tamei Mitzvos for Chukim. At least a few places he indicates in the Kuzari that accepting the mysterious, things that you don't understand, represents a very high level. Certainly some people explain in the Rishus Lahar HaRacharai in that way. The other pshat in Rishus Lahar HaRacharai, which is of course more closely associated with the Rambam and Ramban's approach, the Rambam and Ramban both believe that Tamei Mitzvos is a good thing, even in the Chukim. They both warned that you can't always penetrate divine will, you can't always achieve good success, and you have to be ready for that. But the effort, the enterprise, is valid even in the context of Chukim. So Ein Lecha Rishus Lahar HaRacharai doesn't mean don't think about it or don't investigate it. It means don't second guess me. Meaning, if you can't figure it out, that shouldn't be a basis for questioning the Ribbono Shel Olam. Or if it appears to be paradoxical, as it is in the case of Paraduma, right, the Metayer becomes Tamei, the Metamei becomes Tahar, and so on. So it appears to be a, stira. So instead of, being bothered by that, or being Mahar Rakharai, posing that to me as a question, or challenge, I should say, investigate it all you want, but don't challenge me about it. And on the contrary, you should be pursuing the inner logic of it. Try to figure out the inner coherence of it, and if you can't, you can't, but accept it. But there's nothing wrong with the pursuit per se. But in any case, Paraduma is the classic quintessential chok. It represents a certain response to the Egel Hazav. So does the Binyan HaMishka, right? Shkara ani v'nava. Shkara ani v'maisa Egel, nava ani v'maisa Mishkan. So whatever it is, on the one hand, it seems to be an affirmation that physical symbols can play a role in Avodas Hashem. But, very much on the basis of, Kasha Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. Only when that direction and the details come from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, not when man takes the initiative and oversteps his boundaries. So in a sense, the tikkunim of Paraduma and Mishkan highlight the fact that the Egel itself is a problem of boundaries. Boundaries in man's authority, and also questioning the boundaries of, how far should man investigate or attempt to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam. At what point is it just proper to stand a little bit distant and accept that distance and respect that distance? Again, the question is the problem of Paraduma and Egel Hazahav and Mishkan is a problem of imprecise information, and therefore that's being corrected, or guidelines, or is it bigger than that? Is this idea that there are points beyond which man should not tread? Not only the Egel Hazahav, but the very failure of the first luchos. As I'll say, the first luchos were bekolos of Rakim, and that's one of the reasons that they failed. Ein lecha yafa minatznius. That's why luchos shnios were more successful than luchos rishonos. Again, that's part of the background of these mystical or mystifying, challenging psukim of Moshe Rabbeinu pushing to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam in a way. Namely, the question is this something that should be pursued? Or in the Hayapal of Seals, sometimes, certainly publicizing isn't the right way to go. Maybe not even pushing or trying to understand. Of course, in the aftermath of the Pesukim, in the end of the parasha, once the Luchos Shnios, which are symptomatic of this policy of Shnios, Ish lo yale ima, gam ish al yeron b'chal ahar, gam atzon abakar lirum, el mol ahar ahu, right, the only Moshe Rabbeinu and no one else, sharp contrast. And it's ironic, because the first Luchos are Bichtav Elokim, the second Luchos have much more input of man, and yet, it's done with Tznius. Maybe that's the condition. Man can have input as long as he knows his place. But in any case, after all the Yudgim Amidos and everything else, so we're told that when Moshe Rabbeinu returns, he's separate from the rest of the Tzibur. The experience that he has is one which isolates him. Lachem lo achal, mayim lo shasa. The reddest Moshe Har Sinai, Shnei Pasedus Piat Moshe, Ritha Minahar, Moshe Lo Yada Kikaran Arpana Bedabro Ita. Vayar Aaron Bekobene Yisodos Moshe Ne Karan Arpana, Vayir Begesha Seilav, Vayikra Lehem Moshe, Vayashuvay Lav Aaron Bekola Nasim, Vayida Vaydaber Moshe Alehen, Akre Chei Nitshu Kobene Yisodai Tzadeh, Vizkola Asher Dibar Hashem Ito Har Sinai, Vaykal Moshe Bedaber Ita, Vayitein Alpana Basdeh, he has to wear a mask. So in a sense, the aftermath of, you could argue it's the aftermath of the second Luchos, of course it is, the Tznius one, but it's also the aftermath of this whole discussion with the Ribbono Shel Olam about the proper limits. In a sense, Moshe achieves something that is unique, that no one else can, that no one else knows about, that alters his physical appearance irrevocably, that symbolizes that he's now off limits. In a way, it's ironic, the Ribbono Shel Olam is off limits in part to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu's awareness of that made him off limits, requiring a mask symbolized by Karan or Panna to the rest of Klal Yisrael. That's the beginning context, and that's the aftermath of the context. The psukim themselves, as they are very, very mysterious. Hodieni nadru achecha and hareni kvodecha. The question is, what do Moshe Rabbeinu really want, and what is the response that he's given? There's a whole range of interpretations. I'm not going to go through all of them. It won't take much too long. Just zero in on one or two, which I think are symptomatic of different approaches. The Radvaz and the Tshuvas, picked up by some of the people who wrote on Chumash. The Radvaz is a Tshuva in which he basically argues that Moshe Rabbeinu asked for nothing more than to be able to engage the Ribbono Shel Olam without any kind of intermediary. That's really what he asked. No Meturgamon, straight Nevuah. And the way the Radvaz formulates the question, so when Ribbono Shel Olam partially turned him down, basically he said, you can't do that. The ambition of the question is far less than according to most Mefarshim, and the fact that he's partially turned down, even in that respect, has to moderate our view of the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. Not that it is unique, it's certainly unique, but it's normally described as being unique because it is direct, without a Meturgamon, in an awakened state. Right, there are several features that that reflect the uniqueness, the singular nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. Basically, the Radvaz is ratcheting everything down one level. In a sense, Moshe asked for a much less ambitious a secret information, and even then he was partially disappointed. However, I think the more general view is in line with the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, Parak Halacha Yud, and in Mor Nebuchim. The Rambam explains that there were two questions asked here: Harenius Kvodecha and Hodieni Na Es Dvarecha, Es Drachecha. So So Rambam explains, Ma'u zeh shebikash Moshe Rabbeinu lahasig, kish'ama harein yinaz kodecha, bikesh leida amita simatso shalat kodesh baruch hu, ad shiyeh yadua belibo, kemo yediyas echad min anashim, sh'ra'a panav v'nechka tzuratso v'kirmo, sh'nimsa oso ish nifrad b'dayto mishar anashim. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to have a cognition of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of his essence, in the same way that man can recognize the unique and singular nature of another man after he studies it and makes an impression on him, he can pick him out, he can be discriminating about him afterwards. Kach bikesh Moshe Rabbeinu, lios mitzias HaKadosh Baruch Hu nifredas delibo, nishar mitzios hanimtzayim. He wanted to understand what was unique and singular about God's existence. Again, the purpose wasn't just intellectual, obviously, it was spiritual. The Baruch Shem said to him, you know, this is beyond your capacity. This is beyond your capacity as a flesh and blood human being, as great as you are, you do not have the ability to understand this. Vahodio Baruch Hu, Masha Layada Adam Lepada, Vahodio Akra. He did, right, share with him information that no other person had previously understood. Achi Sigma Mita Simatso, Davar Shanifrad HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'dayto Mishar Nimtzayim. He did understand what was unique and singular about the Ribbono Shel Olam from other creations. Kamoshi Pared Achad Amnashim Shara Akorav, Okay. So basically, that's the Rambam's approach. The Rambam has a whole saga here. Ein daiti b'shavas al devarim. Halo rol har Sinai nechvodo. Uvar yom avar yom shalukas rishonos mashalor navi v'choze. Atcha kinu bo malachi asharis. They were jealous of bichul adachpo. Recast Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's discussion with the Ribbono Shel Olam was much more practical. It was about leadership. It was about immediate acknowledgement of, you know, the destiny of Klal Yisrael. And even then, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, you know, there are certain things that are beyond your grasp, or at least, you know, beyond Klal Yisrael's grasp, and so on. As for some of the other elements, he says, those are sodot and so on. Again, you can see that there's two perspectives here, the Radbaz, or three perspectives, the Radbaz, the Raivid, the Rambam, different perspectives. What did Moshe Rabbeinu dare to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam? Was it really information about his essence or not? Even according to the Rambam, that this is the question that he asked, the response needs an understanding. In the Hilchos Sotah Torah, it sounds like the Rambam is telling us that the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, not necessarily that it's a bad question, we didn't criticize him for the question, but or that fundamentally I refuse to answer you, but as a flesh and blood human being, you're not capable of understanding my essence. And therefore, the project is a futile one. And that's what emerges in the Rambam and Morna Bukhim as well. Rambam and Morna Bukhim, Perek Aleph, Perek Nundalit, Perek Nundalit. So he has this elaboration of what he says in the Sotah Torah. The wisest man, our teacher Moshe, asks two things of God and receives a reply respecting both. One thing he asked was that God should let him know his true essence. The other, this is a translation, of course, from Rambam's Mordechai in Arabic, which in fact he asked first, that God should let him know his attributes. Here the Rambam, the Mordechai, develops the idea that Hodieni na es drachecha is asking about attributes. And Hareni es kvodecha is about essence. In answer to both these petitions, God promised that he would let him know all of his attributes, and that these were nothing but his actions. That's why Rechamti and so on, Chanosi, he also told him that his true essence could not be perceived, and point out a method by which he could obtain the utmost knowledge of God possible for man to acquire. The knowledge obtained by Moshe has not been possessed by any human being before or after him. His petition to know the attributes of God is contained in the following: show me now thy way, that's Rechecha, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight. Consider how many excellent ideas found expression in the words, show me thy ways, that I may know thee. We learn from them that God is known by his attributes. I'm skipping a little. The pleasure and displeasure of God, the approach to him, the withdrawal from him, are proportional to the amount of man's knowledge or ignorance concerning the Creator. Essentially, the Rambam takes the view that there are two questions here. One was answered, one was not. Even the question that wasn't answered is not a question which is inappropriate. It's just a question which man has no capacity to appreciate. As for the first, that still gives great knowledge, not only of, you know, what it is that Baruch Shalom does in the world, but through what he does in the world, attributes of action and attributes that are, as we call them, negative attributes, what he is not, also reveal much about the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's no surprise that the Rambam should not feel that the Baruch Shalom criticized Moshe Rabbeinu for asking the question. Nor is it a surprise that according to the Rambam, Hodieni na derachecha is not just practical knowledge, but it ends up being metaphysically significant information as well. According to the Rambam, Yediyas Hashem and the pursuit of Yediyas Hashem, you know, is a critical component. As you know, that's the Rambam says this in the Sodei HaTorah many times, and of course this is a leitmotif in Mor Nebuchim. It's at the basis of his understanding of Nebuah and Hashkacha and all sorts of other things as well. Okay. Then he goes on again to explain, to repeat some of this. There's some interesting things here, but I was late, so we'll leave it. It's interesting, though, that Rabbeinu Bechai, I think, has a different implication. He goes in the Derech of the Rambam, that the question of Hodieni Nos Rachecha is a question of attributes, and the question of Harenius Kvodecha is a question of essence. But Rabbeinu Bechai quotes the pasuk in Mishlei when he wants to explain all of this, and he doesn't say so explicitly, but I think that there's an implication. Kvod Elokim Haster Davar, uKvod Melachim Chakor Davar. So it could be that all he means to say is, how he's interpreting the pasuk, Kvod Elokim is Harenina as Kvodecha. That's the essence. The essence of the Ribono Shel Olam Haster Davar. That's mysterious. Kvod Melachim, the way that he, you know, is manigas olam, his malchus is expressed in such a way, chakar davar, that's something that you should inquire about, you should investigate. In other words, attributes of action, negative attributes, attributes, yes, essence, no. But I think that there's also an implication here that the issue is not only one of human capacity, but that the issue is one of propriety. And when the Baruch Shalom said, this panai, you know, lo yeru acharai, you know, is open to you, but not panai, what he was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu is, kvod alokim aster davar. Meaning, it's a violation of the, not just kvod in the sense of kvodecha, kvodi is not accessible to you, but it's a violation of kvod Hashem to be searching, to be seeking to understand fully kvod Hashem. And it should be Haster Davar. Because there's a difference, it's not only the difference between essence and manigos, it's also the difference between the Ribono Shel Olam as an Elohim and human kings, or even what, you know, Ribono Shel Olam's manifestation as a king, Kavod Malachim Chakar Davar. Because what's being stated here is that there are limits. Just as according to the Radvaz and the Ravid, the limits are so clear that Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have been presumptuous to ask the question to begin with. So too, it could be that the answer is not that you can't understand it, you can't apprehend it. Lu Yitzur, you could, I would reveal this to you as well. Even Moshe Rabbeinu has his limits. That's the concept of Kvod Elokim Haster Dabar. Essentially, then, it works, I think, with the beginning and the end of the parsha. What the Rebbe Shalom is telling Moshe very profoundly is that Yediyas Hashem is very, very important. Hodieni na as drachecha. Again, Rebbe Shalom has a very nice comment on drachecha. He says, it doesn't say darkecha, and it doesn't say drachecha with a yud. Darkecha means your single derech, and drachecha means your many ways. It says darchecha without a yud. So he says the Moshe Rabbeinu was asking the Ron Shalom essentially, reveal to me, the relationship between this mystery of having one objective. And there being, we spoke last year a lot about Yichud Hashem, right? And we talked about the Ikarim, right? The stira of Yichud Hashem on the one hand, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Achad. And yet, the existence of a dynamic and multifaceted, multivariate world. How can that be? How can it be that, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, there's evil in the world, there's different personalities in the world, different themes and motifs in the world, even different themes and motifs of Avodas Hashem. I spoke last week about the Ketores, the Mizbech HaKetores being a way of mediating between, different ways. How can it all be? So in a sense, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hareini, or Hodieni rather, as Drachecha, meaning this dialectic between one Derech and many Drachim. One objective, one Rabbeinu Shalom, expressing itself and manifesting itself in many, many ways, which is essentially the mystery of cosmogony and the mystery of the world. How did the world come about, and then how does the world continue to operate? In a sense, that was being asked. That the answer to that question was given, Hodieni na es drachecha. But as for kvodecha, again, that's the limit. And essentially, the fallacy of the ego was not knowing that there were limits. Reinforcing the idea of limits, even Moshe Rabbeinu, who has the experience privately with Rabban Shalom, ends up being transformed by it in such a way that he becomes somewhat off limits. Ein lecha yafa minatzniyus. There are certain things that are better left unanswered. In a way, the chiyuv of Yedias Hashem is a chiyuv that has a limit that too is part of the imitatio dei. We began the year by noting that. On the one hand, we imitate the Ribbono Shalom, Ki Moshe Vas Mekom Lachto Hashem Elokim Lasos. And on the other hand, part of our imitation is also an awareness of the fact that we can't imitate and that there is a gap. Man has to rest because he isn't the creator. Man also rests as a symbol of the Tzimtzum and the rest of the Ribbono Shalom. Both of these things are true. And that's true in this dialectic of Hodieni Na Zrachecha and Hareini Es Kvodecha. The discussion with regard to Chukim is very much in keeping with that issue. Now, some of the Farshim will understand that Chukim represent the area that is off limits, the mystery beyond which man should not attempt to penetrate. Or at least that it would be better that way, to be able to accept them as is would be preferred. The Rambam and Ramban think not, but the very concept that there are things that aren't limits is something which seems to have very strong roots. Now again, this should not be confused with a Kierkegaardian approach in which, things are elevated in their stature by virtue of the fact, that they're unintelligible or absurd or paradoxical. I don't think Yahadus necessarily believes in that either. I don't think you gain greater stature for being but on the contrary, there are certain things that are of great stature and therefore they're inaccessible. They're not, this profile of their stature is not raised by their inaccessibility. It's the opposite relationship. This idea, of course, is at the root of many things. We've spoken in the past about the need for matirim in Avodas Hashem. Partially that comes from a sense of the distance and the gap. We relate to the Rebbeinu Shalom as an av al banim, kirachem av al banim. We're supposed to feel close to him and reach out to him in tefillah. And we believe that he empathizes and identifies with us, im anochi b'tzara. And these are reflected not only in drashos and in psukim, but in concrete halachos as well. But at the same time, there is the sense of the distance, the necessary distance that has to remain. And that's why Jewish ritual is something that can only be divinely or rabbinically directed. At the end of the day, Kedusha and Tzniyus are identified. Kedoshim Tiyu is Prushim. Rabban said very beautifully that a Shira, you know, may be the highest form of Torah Shebaktzav. Kisvili as a Shira Hazos. The whole Torah is considered to be a Shira. But when you have a specific Shira, the Shira is written in a very unusual form. Right? Aria, Chalgani, Levena. And he just wants to point it out that really, you know, you have blank spaces in the Shira. You have the Shira and then blanks. You have double blanks almost to text. What's unique about poetry is not so much what's said, but what isn't said. You know, it's the unstated. You know, it's what's there in the background, and that's what a shira is. A riach al gabi levena. It's empty spaces, right, corresponding to what is being said. Shira shirim is kodesh hakadoshim, because in the end of the day, I'll just explain. The pshat is totally unacceptable. It's b'rit shir ha-shirim, it's pshat, so it's definitely not kisvi ha-kodesh, right? It's you know, it's too explicit, you know, to be a davar shebekedusha. You know, if it relates to the relationship of a regular man and a regular woman, right? It's too trivializing and much too explicit to be a davar shebekedusha. Never mind kodesh kodashim. What makes it kodesh kodashim is that it really is. As Chazal say, it's a symbol of the relationship between a Kodesh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, and it's almost impossible then to read it kipshuto. You have to almost only read it according to Chazal. This idea that you have something that can't be read kipshuto, that is all, you know, symbol, and you need to break the code in a way. Reflects this concept of tzniyus and kedusha, and that's what shir hashirim becomes or emerges as something which is kodesh kadashim. So in a sense, this, you know, poses a significant challenge for us today, because we live in a society, you know, which is singularly crude and explicit in all of its aspects. I'm not even talking about, you know, things that are obvious, issues of rayos and other things where, you know, the standards of tznius just don't exist. Even if you compare, you know, the last 10 years with the previous, and certainly the last 20 or 25 years, just take America, for example. It's worse than, I think it's worse than Europe, so they say, but 25 years in America to, you know, to 50 years previous to that, there's been a tremendous erosion in standards. But I'm not even referring to that, you know, to language and to imagery, you know, which is so explicit. I'm talking about even in a much more subtle way. This idea that, you know, everybody's private life is everyone else's concern. This notion that transparency, whether it be for public figures or, you know, just famous people, that, you know, it's really everybody's business. Even if it's, we're not talking about things that are untoward. Everybody's feelings and everybody's. This now came out a couple of days ago that before George Bush ran for president, so he had a conversation with some family friend. I guess it was an author, and it turns out the fellow taped him without his knowledge. It's just, you know, it boggles the mind. Turns out there's no great revelations there, but that's beside the point. Just this idea that you could, you know. You could encroach on someone's privacy that way. But I say it's not even, you know, the idea that everybody has a right, you know, to keep things that are precious to them under wraps. the issue goes further than that. It's whether people feel even that they want to keep private matters of their life under wraps. Sometimes you meet somebody and, you know, within 5 minutes of meeting you, he'll tell you everything about himself. Sometimes it's his friendliness, depends what it is, but sometimes it can be very very embarrassing. The sense that there are boundaries and limits, and that, you know, there's a kodesh hakadoshim that every person has, at least it should take time and a measure of confidence before you open up and reveal certain things, is almost almost lost. I think it's an important nafka mina in how one forges friendships, and in the context of social circumstances, of the people who are in a dating stage, you know, and how at what pace does one reveal, you know, one's innermost self. I think these are very important issues. The values of Yahdus are such that I think it's supposed to take time. One isn't supposed to camouflage, things that should be revealed, but you're also not supposed to reveal so quickly. In some cases, you're not supposed to reveal to certain people at all certain of your most innermost thoughts and perspectives. And it's, again, it's hard to project that in today's culture, because I say even the innocent things, forget about arayos and you know, embarrassing things, just this idea of a measured or a paced friendship or basis for a relation, etc. It almost doesn't exist anymore. Sharp an important application of all this, of course, is also the issue of theodicy, which slides on, so I'll mention in 2 minutes. But these psukim are understood by the Gemara Brachos not as focusing on general knowledge of the Ribono Shel Olam, but on the specific mystery of the world, the mystery of Tzadik Hara Lo, Rasha, V'Tov Lo. But again, it's interesting to note that you have the same, almost parallel, kind of treatment of the issue. Number one, the Gemara Brachos Dav Zayin, the Gemara quotes to Deus, Rabbi or Rabbi Yochanan, whether the Baruch Shalom answered the Moshe Rabbeinu or not. Did he give him did he provide him with the secret of the Odyssey or not? The Meir says no. Rabbi Yochanan says that he did. There are also those interpretations in the Farshim of both for Rabbi Yochanan and for Rabbi Meir. But again, the question is, because that is something, that's part of the Ribono Shel Olam's Kodesh HaKadosh, that's part of his essence too. His essence isn't only, you know, his quintessential nature, which we can't comprehend. It's also, in part, there are certain things which he chooses to share with us about, you know, his methodology in running the world. And there are certain things that are beyond not only our understanding, but beyond the propriety of our asking. There are certain things that are his domain, and it's presumptuous of us to try to encroach in that domain. Here, too, we find different perspectives, whether Tzadik Hara Lo is something that we can't apprehend. If we had the bigger picture, also it's a very nice drasha, it's about, you know, Zachorai, you know, you only see things, you know, narrowly. If you were to see the big picture, you know, the sweep of history, you'd understand Sofo Mochiach, you know, Al-Tchilasa. Some Sofer has that interpretation. You know, Sachorai means, you know, when it's all over and you look back, then it's all very sensible, very logical, and very accessible. But since the Rosh Hashanah is Yud Kei Vav Kei, Hayah Hoveh Yiyeh, so for him, you know, all of history is laid out. And for us, we live in the present. You know, our past is just that. And then our future is something that we can only speculate about. So because we don't have that ahistorical sense, so for us, everything is mysterious. But the implication is that there's nothing wrong with the question, and we, assuming we had this perspective, we would be vouchsafed the answer as well. And others, I think, really think that this is part of Harenina as Klodecha, meaning the answer is no. There are certain things that the Ribono Shel Olam, you know, that's his prerogative, and he guards that prerogative. That's what makes him the Borei Olam, and that's what makes us, you know, with all of our striving in the Hidamos, but we're still creatures. We're still the Mitzuveh, and Acharai is open to us, but not necessarily not necessarily the Panah. Again, the fact is that, you know, when it comes to Ruachecha, it's Hodienina. The request looks ambitious, but it really is limiting in a way. It's an intellectual or a cognitive request. You know, teach me, explain to me, rationalize for me, and so on. It's fascinating that, you know, the one that's turned down, or at least partially turned down, is the Hareni now. Again, as some of the Farshim note, Hareni implies, normally you would think that Hareni is less than Hodieni. Hareni means demonstrate to me or show me. Show me something is different than teach it to me. Teach me is often a higher level. But in this context, if you're talking about Kvodecha, so it's not something that's physically visible. The Hareni here has a different context and therefore a different connotation. The connotation here is an intuitive understanding. In other words, give me the kind of knowledge that transcends cognitive knowledge so that I can feel it and apprehend it. So the Harenina, according to some of Farshim, is given, but the Harenina is given for, in the end, Harenina is given for Drachecha, but it's never given for Kvodecha. That's the line. You can have some Hodieni about Kvodecha, and you can have some Hareni about Drachecha, but to have a Hareni on Kvodecha, that's where we draw the line. The Rav's view was a little bit different. In a famous passage in Kol Lo, he tried to explain that the whole issue of Tzadik Baralo can be looked at from two perspectives. One is an intellectual one, a philosophical one. That's what the Rav associated with Ish, what he called Ish HaGoral, the man of fate. You know, a person who is a chefza, basically, in the world, and you know, he looks at the world, you know, from that point of view, as a passive object, and who's interested intellectually in understanding Tzadik Baralo, and the answer to him is that, you know, there is no answer, there is no understanding that will satisfy him. But to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Klal Yisrael, who are not only men of faith, but also men of destiny, Ish HaYad, to them a different response is given, because they are not interested from a detached philosophic point of view, again as an object of creation, but rather as someone who's active in the world and who's committed to Tikkun Olam, who's a subject in the world, a partner with the Ribbono Shel Olam in the Bria itself. For such a person not of destiny, not of fate rather, but of destiny, the answer of Tzadik Baralo is Mimashvesh B'Maasecha. Not a philosophical answer, but a practical answer, interestingly enough. How best to exploit the situation of suffering to elevate one's religious profile and one's status as a religious personality. To that, Moshe Rabbeinu was given the answer very, very clearly. And that, of course, is the concept of tshuva, the concept of mimashmesh b'masecha, the idea that while one can control what is around him, one can control the response that you have to what's around you. And in your inner world, that makes all the difference in the world. You can't control what happens to you physically, but you can always control the response that you have to it. And of course, that's not something that takes place immediately. That is something that that is a product of a lifetime commitment to Torah and to mitzvos and to Yerushalayim and to this concept of tznius and kedusha. If a person develops in the proper way, then he has the wherewithal to withstand, you know, the tests and the trials that he encounters, and in that sense, he's given the response, the positive response to the question of Odeyenina as Drakha. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll try to shorten this in the future. Let's move on to...